so for this sesshin, the text that Kate and I selected to talk about is a case from the Book of Equanimity. And I learned today that the reason it's called the Book of Equanimity is not that it's so equanimous. It's simply that the person, the monk who wrote the prefaces to the case, lived at Equanimity Monastery.
And there you go.
We were talking about how that it wasn't equanimous all the time at Equanimity Monastery. People probably got sick and had to go home, and people probably had to change their seats and do jobs they didn't know how to do and put up with the teacher's corrections. And so I think that we have many before us in this monastery of equanimity, which really is the whole world, right? It is a monastery of equanimity that's not always equanimous. So this is case 82, and it's called Yunmen's Sounds and Shapes. And before I read it, because it might sound a little confounding, just a reminder that all koans are personal, all teishos are personal. And so our invitation is to see what this case and this teisho mean for each one of us. And my teishos are often about what I need to hear, as selfish as that sounds, but I must admit to the truth of that. And so each of us needs to gather up and bring close that which we need to hear at this moment. So the case has three parts. There's the preface to the assembly, the main case, and the appreciatory verse. So the preface, and I'll read the whole thing first and then talk a little bit about it. When sounds and colors are not let go, this is to be conditioned by the environment. Seeking by sound and seeing by shape, one will not see the Tathagata. Aren't you pursuing a way to return home? The case. Attention. Master Yunmen addressed the assembly, saying, hearing a sound, realize the way. Seeing a shape, enlighten the mind. Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva brought money to buy a farm rice cake, but released from her hands, it became a bean jam cake. And the appreciatory verse. Leaving the gate, spurring up the horse, sweep away the comet. The smoke and dust of 10,000 lands clears by itself. In the 12 sense fields, trivial influences are forgotten. The 3,000 worlds are illuminated with bright light. So to unpack it a little bit, starting with the preface. When sounds and colors are not let go. So you'd see it a little contradictory, right? Because the preface is talking about the problem of not letting them go, and the case is saying, hearing a sound, realize the way. Seeing a shape, enlighten the mind. So, as usual, we get stuck on the poles of opposites, and our mind tries to make them come together. But in the preface where they're saying when sounds and colors are not let go, in this sense, the sounds and colors are the sounds and colors of the objective world. So when we persist in our thinking of subject and object, me here, everything out there, you out there, and that feeling of separation that is overwhelmingly a sense of lack when we don't know that each person we bow to is in fact us. We are Buddha, they are Buddha, and in some grand mysterious way we are not separate. And so when we can't let go of this, we become really prisoners of the objective world. You know, more than just being conditioned by the environment, we become the prisoners of our conceptual thinking. Nothing else seems possible. Earlier this week, we were talking in Pembroke about the Lojong slogans that relate to realizing the absolute bodhicitta. And one of them is to see the world like a dream. And this slogan reminds us that our thoughts about reality are not something that we should hold on to tightly. When we do, that's when we get all bound up in feeling like the world is impossible. And how am I ever going to survive this latest problem, this latest onslaught? But when the world seems less solid, when it seems more like the impermanent, ephemeral reality, then we don't have to be so caught up in our reactivity. It loosens it up a little bit for us. So this is one of the Tibetan techniques for not becoming such a prisoner of the objective world, of the world of duality, of the world of self and other. So the preface goes on, seeking by sound and seeing by shape, one will not see the Tathagata. And this line comes from the Diamond Sutra itself. And it is the teaching that as long as we still live in the world of duality, the world of subject and object, the world where I am quite certain of who I am and of who you are and of the objective nature of the life that I have, when I persist in that, then I cannot realize my Buddha nature, my true self, the person in the grass hut that we just chanted, the one who doesn't live inside, outside, or in between, and who can, after eating, take a nap. Something so simple and ordinary, which we take for granted, but quite a miraculous thing that we are beings who can take naps when we don't live in the world of subject and object. Everything becomes miraculous. And then the last line, aren't you pursuing a way to return home? So aren't we all trying to find this true self, this Buddha nature, this reality that makes us feel alive and connected and compassionate. And this is the way home. And so our teacher here, Yen Men, and the people who compiled these koans, Hong Zhe compiled the Book of Serenity, and another person who lived at Equanimity Monastery wrote the prefaces, all to try to encourage us to find our way home. So this main case. Master Yen Men addressed the assembly saying, hearing a sound, realize the way. And this line comes or calls to mind another koan. And this one is about a very intelligent monk who memorized all the sutras, knew all the commentaries, a Daishan kind of monk. And but still, his teacher felt that he lived only in the realm of his mind and did not want to leave him like that. And so the teacher asked him a question, and he said, what is your original face before your parents were born? This is one of the quintessential koans that we can work with our whole life. It is like, what is mu? It is like, what is who? It is, what is your face, your original face, before your parents were born? And when this question was posed to the monk who was so learned and knew everything about the Buddha Dharma, he was just completely lost. It stopped him in his tracks. All the learning that he had done was of no avail. He searched through his commentaries, he searched through the sutras, and nothing came to him, and he lost his confidence. He became like the sutra we just read, you know, convinced that he was dim and dull and that it was impossible for him to hold a candle to any of these teachers. And so he went to live in a hut, but I don't think it was the hut of the grass food hermitage. It was probably more a hut where he just beat himself up all day long, you know, internally for being inadequate, for being dim and dull, and for having just no hope. He was a lost cause. And maybe some of us, can recognize that habit pattern in ourselves. We might not go out and build a hut and sit in it, but the kind of hut we build is often not the one that the old man illuminates forms and their nature just by sitting. And so he lived in that hut for quite a long time, and all he did was practice. So there was something there, you know, some bodhicitta there that made him keep practicing even though he was convinced of his inability to understand anything, to realize anything. One day he was sweeping, and I so love the sweeping activity. It occurs in many of the koans, and when we actually sweep the floor, and just sweep the floor, we can feel so present with the broom and the floor and the dust, and nothing really matters except for that activity. And as he was sweeping, a pebble flew up and struck a bamboo pole, and it made a tock. And in that instant, he awoke to something and came to understand for himself his original face before his parents were born. So just to go on to the next line, this one is seeing a shape enlighten the mind. This one calls forth the koan about another monk who was searching for 30 years, trying to find a true teacher who would open his mind. And one day he happened to see the peach blossoms, and he wrote this beautiful poem. The peach blossoms became his teacher. So this shape and this sound became the teachers of these two monks of old, in a way that no words, no human beings, no beautiful sutras could. For me, it is very much what Master Dogen talks about too. Master Dogen was not fond of talking about Kensho, talking about these experiences that may seem kind of transcendent. You know, he actually was delighting in talking about the endless awakening that is available every single moment from every particular thing. Every phenomenal thing in the world is actualizing the beauty and the expansiveness and the harmony of this one great reality of which we are all part. And so we don't need any special thing to happen. We just need to pay attention to the very ordinary things that surround us every day and every moment. So the case goes on to say, Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva brought money to buy a farm rice cake. And that is the ordinary, the farm rice cake. We have some rice cakes in the cupboard. I'll put them out later. And I'll try them. But the key is, like Avalokiteshvari, you must empty your pockets completely before you get the rice cake. Mm-hmm. Empty yourself out. And then it says, but released from her hands, it became a bean jam cake. And there's a little pun on this, because the Japanese word for bean jam cake, I read, is manju. And so manju is a kind of cake. And it's also Manjushri, the Bodhisattva of wisdom, right? And so when Avalokiteshvara releases her attachment, right, to even this wonder of an ordinary rice cake, then becomes the traceless trace that Dogen talks about. This traceless trace where we are always in every moment, even though we don't realize it, even though we don't believe it, always actualizing this enlightened activity that others perceive. And for us to be able to just live and be alive to this seemingly ordinary life, moment after moment, bringing our intention to just this moment, then the traceless trace is revealed for all beings. Master Dogen says, in the earth and the sky of the 10 directions, that there is felt the power of one person's practice. And even if others don't believe it, and even if you don't believe it yourself, he says, it is so. And is with that kind of faith that we need to engage in this moment-by-moment attention, this moment-by-moment emptying out our pockets just for the great pleasure of a very plain rice cake. So I will leave the rest for Kate tomorrow, but for now we will have our Dharma dialogue, and please feel free to sit comfortably and talk about any manner of things.